Welcome to the Bringing Her Hope podcast. I'm Bethany Bravery, and I'm thrilled that you are here. Each week, I invite a girlfriend on the podcast to share not only the story that God is writing for her, but the story that God is redeeming in her life. I cannot wait for you to meet each and every one of these amazing women who I know will inspire you to also live out the story that God is calling you to, and to give you hope that He will be faithful to redeem your story as well. My guest this week is Mara Watson. Mara admits that there are many places God has redeemed her from ADD, alcoholism, homelessness, self-rejection, but all of it stemmed from comparison, from not knowing who God is and who He says that she is and what she was made for. Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of the Bringing Her Hope podcast. I know a lot of you are going through difficult times with COVID-19. I just want you to know that we want to be here for you. And within social distancing, I want to introduce you to another friend of mine. This is Mara Watson. Mara, thank you for coming to the show, girl.
Thanks, Bethany. I am excited to be here doing this morning. I am talking about comparison. That's been what God's put on my heart as my thread throughout my story.
I love that. And tell me a little bit about you, Mara. Are you a mom? Are you a wife? What is it about your story?
I am both. I am a wife to my awesome husband, who is a avid mountaineer and personal trainer and all around amazing man. And we have two boys, Zane and Cade. They're teenagers. Such a strange, that shift,
yes,
into teenagerness has been a very interesting move.
Absolutely. And as Mara mentioned a little bit earlier, we are kind of unpacking the topic of the thief of comparison. And Mara, I know that you've admitted that there have been so many places that God has redeemed you. And we're going to be talking about that, you know, as we weave in and out of your story. But it's all stemmed from comparison. So why don't you take us on that journey, Mara?
I was a very young age. I felt very different from other people. I went to a small, very small private school, and school was totally not my thing. And I was bouncy and energetic, and it was hard for me to sit and listen and memorize and care really about what was being taught. So I was the only student to get in sixth grade, and I was the first girl to ever go to the principal's office at this school for being too bouncy. I loved the social aspect of school, but hated sitting for the classes. No one else was like me because of the small amount of kids, I guess, they're around. And at home, my siblings were straight A students on the student council. They played sports, which my family really rallied around and behind, and to their greatest degree of trying, they could not get me involved or interested in organized sports. I'd rather ride my bike, climb trees, build forts in the woods. I felt I wasn't intelligent. I felt I was too unruly. So eventually my parents heard about ADD and they took me to a psychiatrist to see if that could be my problem. They tested and confirmed to everyone's suspicion that and put me on Ritalin. And from that point on, my parents and close family friends asked me if I'd taken my pills, if I ever acted too boisterously. So I got the idea that I'm not okay if I'm not on drugs. And I'm not acceptable for who I am. I've got to be someone else. And that was really devastating to me as a, like when you're forming your ideas of who you are and what people think of you, that was really hard. The Ritalin allowed me to better focus on my homework. It didn't make me like it, but I could focus. But when I was on it, I felt like a part of me was dead or locked away. I learned that I could either be drugged or I could be socially acceptable. And yeah, that I was just unacceptable otherwise. So on the label and the drugs, I was much more excitable, energetic, hands-on, uninterested in learning by traditional means, all of this. And so thus I was troublesome and bad in my mind. That comparison, which is what we all naturally do, and there's nothing maybe inherently evil about comparing, but it's when we compare ourselves to others and decide that we are falling short, that we are under this is a delusion. And so I found myself short and inadequate compared to everyone else. And that was my state of being as I launched into high school and beyond. They took me from private school into a regular school because our school ended, or the private school ended at sixth grade. And that introduced me to a much larger population of people, which was great because I found out I wasn't the only one who didn't fit into a mold. But it was also bad because I decided at this point that I was going to reject the mold and those I felt had rejected me, which first and foremost I felt was my family. So I found alcohol, left home, banded with people who were also lost, and went along a poor trajectory for quite a while due to those misconceptions of who I was. And I was brought up in a... We went to Catholic church when it was Easter and Christmas, but I had no idea who God was. I didn't... It was all just... I don't even want to say religion because I don't believe that religion is a bad thing. I believe there's a religious spirit, which is a bad thing, but true religion is different. But yes, it was just a religious spirit and it didn't have any impact on me. Nothing, I didn't feel anything. I didn't learn anything that touched me. But I did at that point and always have know that there was a God. Like that part I understood. There was just Jesus was, I don't know, a great story or a silly story at best. I don't know. but I did carry God throughout my life with me. And whenever I was really hurting or things would happen later on after I got through the drugs and the alcohol, for the most part, I would pray. And I got to a point in my life where there was, I feel like, a very deep relationship with God alone. And he would talk to me throughout the day, and I journaled a lot, and I just felt very close to his presence. And the years went on, and what continued to happen, I got married, I had children. My ideas of myself didn't change, even though I had gotten over alcoholism. I quit drinking at age, I believe it was 22. Before that, I was... So the first time I ever drank alcohol, I felt freedom. You know, I just didn't care anymore. I didn't need to pretend to be someone else. I just didn't feel anymore, so I didn't care. And I started drinking all the time. I showed up to school with bottles of orange juice half full of vodka and drank all day. I was smoking pot, then doing acid, anything not to feel. And soon I didn't care about anything or anyone anymore at that point. One day my mom yelled at me, I better shape up or get out. And I was elated. It was just no thought of her, or my family or anything. I was leaving. I just packed my stuff in a couple of paper grocery bags and moved out at 16 or 17 years old. And I really wanted to belong. So I found people, as I mentioned before, that were also outside of that mold. And banded together, and, you know, life was great. It was one big party, but there was no adult supervision, and we were all just cycling down the drain, but having a great time, thinking it was the best ever. We broke off in different assortments of drugs and different things. I got into different things at different times, but stealing stuff. There was a point where people were shooting and stabbing each other. Some of my friends killed another friend. It was just, to the total degree, we were lawless and falling apart. But we felt like we had each other, and there was this camaraderie, and so it was okay. It was us against the world. And so I think that sense of belonging that we can find when we feel lost, when we compare and we decide that we're inadequate, and we find other people who have decided this or decided they're like us in this, then there's such a false sense of not just family, but like a belonging. We get our identity from something outside of Christ, and it feels so good, but it is so bad, and eventually it becomes known. But by that time, sometimes some people feel like it's too late to get out, and their hope is gone. And so I was really blessed to have different moments in my life with different people where hope was spoken into my life and over me, and that was a super big, important part of this. And that was actually mostly from the family that I had rejected, thinking they had rejected me, which, of course, they never felt like they rejected me. They were just trying to help me in their mind. That's how it came off to me, was I needed help, so there was something wrong with me.
Let me ask from that perspective of a kid, maybe there's a parent listening right now that has a adolescent child struggling with these areas. What were you feeling as a kid, and what do you think could be said for you to be able to receive the love that they were trying to offer?
Gosh, you know, I really don't thought this through, being a mother myself. And, you know, there's a point in my life where I definitely blamed my parents and my family. But in the end, the thing I keep coming to is that there's nothing, like, as humans, we will never say everything right. And we may never say most things right, but that's not even the important part. When you look at people's stories, when I look at my story, I see that it's not what we say and what we do, it's what we, not that doesn't have a part, but it's God. Like, we have to have Jesus. We have to have that, those moments, that thing that we can go back to. And if it was never there, it has to be introduced as a person. Jesus needs to be introduced to us at some time, even if it's our own prompting to begin with, but we're all lost without him. And we can always look at somebody said something and something happened and maybe a whole lot of somethings, but he overcomes all of it. So as a parent, I would just say, make sure that you're not just telling them about Jesus, but you're displaying him in your own private life. You've got your own time with him and your own prayer life that you're able to connect with God, that he can connect with our children. And we're praying over them and showing them the steadfastness, even when we're failing at it in our life, in areas that at least they know, okay, I see my mom with the Bible in the quiet times where I'm not, she doesn't even know I'm going to walk in, or, and then they go back, we go back to that. We go to those places that helped those that we love when we're really hurting.
I love that. And
I don't know.
No, that's perfect. I think it's a good reminder that as parents, it's just like what you said. Yes, those things matter. But ultimately, what our deepest desire in all of us is to be with Jesus. Our deepest desire with all of us is for him to be the one that covers it all. And so I think sometimes we blame ourselves as parents that we aren't enough, or we didn't do something correctly, or whatever. It's like, well, his grace covers that. His grace covers that, and he's going to meet our kids where we're at. So, no, I actually love that reminder. I think that's good. Okay, go ahead and continue your story.
Okay, so yeah, the with comparison comes shame. And that shame drives us to hide, not from the world alone, but also then from ourselves. And that is what drove me to seeking to not feel culpable anymore, which is what the drugs and the alcohol did, just took away my culpability. And I was then just hidden in this, you know, you feel like you're hiding, but you're in plain sight. And so the things that drew me out of that. We're going back to my family. In the end, I couldn't get away from the fact that they loved me, even though at some very visceral levels, I didn't believe that, or I felt like I was short and falling short from what their expectations were. But I knew that they loved me. They were always there for me. You know, I wreck a car, I could call mom. I'd go to jail, I could call mom. Not that I would call mom, but my friends would call mom, you know. And they were always showing up for me. They were never withdrawing their love for me. And even though I used to say that my mom kicked me out, she didn't kick me out. She told me, here's your choices. And I chose that I wasn't going to shape up. I was going to leave. So having that to fall back on, I remember the day, and I know it was God. It was just such a amazing, the strength, the hold that alcohol especially had on me was to the point where I felt like I was crazy. I thought I was destined basically to die. I thought I was against myself. Like, who fights themselves? But I had these demons in my head all the time. But just drink. This will stop if you'll just drink. So as I was spending time trying to get sober, I kept going back to my parents. My parents are going to read my obituary. You know, they're going to see, and this is going to devastate them. Like, in the end, it was them and their love that drew me out, even though I felt like it was them that drew me in, you know. So it was such a, God always is such a redeeming God. And the truth of who we are as parents will always come out in the end, even if the lies seem to be taking over at the time. So I got sober off that belief. I just felt like I was had that grace of God to everyday struggle with these voices, which I thought were my own. And day by day, it became a year, and I was sober, and it was an incredible battle, but it was worth every moment of it. But I still didn't have, so I had sobriety at that point, but I didn't have, still didn't have, like, my self-worth. And the fascinating thing that God told me just a couple years ago that I've really made sense to me looking back was that the other side showed me a coin, and on one side was pride, and on the other side was false humility. And he said, it's the same coin. It's the same thing. So even though we can feel awful about ourselves and think of ourselves as, you know, just lower than low, at the same time, we exalt ourselves and think of ourselves as better than, so that would look like super selfish tendencies. Mm-hmm. So at the same time that we're like, we're not worth anything, we will do things that are extremely selfish. And more, the more we think less of ourselves, the more selfish we will behave. And it's this idea that there's nobody caring for me. Like, I have to care for myself. So I'm grabbing at everything and taking for me, because otherwise I'll die. There's no one else going to help me because I'm not worth help. So that was a very conflicting thing happening in my life, where I would just kind of want to die, but then try everything I could to, I guess, live, but not like in a good way, like a selfish way, like the stealing and lying and just so much. I pushed everybody right before I got sober, had pushed everybody out of my life to the point where it was actually the biggest blessing, because then there was nobody to come get me out of jail anymore. And that was okay. You know, and that was the point where I was like, I'm going to die and no one's going to come and save me anymore because of this. So I've got to get sober for these people who I don't want to hurt this badly. I guess at this point, I got sober, and then I met my husband, and we had kids, and I was still behaving super selfishly. And if anything happened, I was ready to run. I was, you know, I mean, I think we were on our way to our wedding, and I threatened to just not go because he did something which made me question his love. And I could so easily believe that someone couldn't love me, that anything would just set me off. So for years after we got married, just off and on, oh, I'm leaving. You know, this isn't worth it or whatever. I always wanted to slam the door first because I didn't want another door slammed on me. So he bless his heart, put up with so much and proved again and again that he loved me, but it was never enough for me. It was never, could never fill that hole or that void. And we moved to Mexico, and I didn't even know the language, and a friend invited us to church. And I was like, oh, well, of course you're going to tell her no. We don't believe in that stuff. At that point, I think I was pretty actively practicing Buddhism. I was a yoga instructor, dabbling in Hinduism a little bit, although that, yeah, was a little off for me. And he said, no, we're going to go. And I think it was the first time he'd ever told me to do anything, like, you know, seriously, like, I'm going to tell you what to do. Tell me to do anything. And for some reason I just, okay, fine. We'll go. Fine. You know, one time. And we went and we just kept going. And it was, the people were great. And some of them spoke English, and being in a country where it was just relieving to speak to some people in English. And they had great kids, amazing kids. And we were like, oh, wow, so good. All at their ages, and a lot of them were homeschooled. And they were just really nice. So for some reason, we just kind of, oh, I know, the week after we went to church, we were at a red light, and my kids were four and five. And they're in the back seat, and they said, Mom, Dad, can we go to church? And we were like, what? No. No, it's not even the right day.
It's not even the right day.
And then one of us, we looked at each other and we're like, wait, it is Sunday. And we're like, we don't even know where it is. It's not the right time. Anyway, it was the right time. And the kids who, I mean, they don't even, they're little, you know, they were like, it's right there. And they reached over and pointed, and we were at an intersection, and that was where the church was. And again, we'd only been one time, so we didn't connect with that until they said that. And we're like, oh gosh. So we just pulled in. And so then we just kept going every week. And at one point I'm in church, and this is probably a month later, and the Lord just spoke to me. He said, will you receive my son? And I almost fell out of my seat. I was like, there was nothing about this story that I thought was true. I mean, I really believe Jesus was just made up. It was incredible. I was just so stunned. I don't even know what the pastor was talking about. He was talking in Spanish and I couldn't keep it up. And I told the Lord, I said, I knew God enough to know that he's true. You know, he's not going to tell me to receive someone who isn't real. And so I just thought about it, and I said, Lord, do I have to now?
Like right now? Yeah.
I mean, in my mind, I'm on my deathbed, right? And I like raise up and I'm like, okay, Jesus, you know, and then then I die. And he just showed me all these pictures and reflections in my heart. And it was like everything I knew of as real hope that I enjoyed, like fun and joy and peace and love, like all of it is just a shadow of the truth without my son. And it was just amazing. There was nothing else to do but say yes. And I lived with, kind of in shame for a while about it. I don't think I told my husband for probably another month. I told my pastors a couple weeks later. Well, at that point, I saw them as my pastors. And I felt foolish, I guess, because of the way I'd lived and the things I'd thought. But I said to God, I said, all right, I accept Jesus. Now you have to show me who he is, because I know he's not who I think he is, who the world, you know, what I've received of him from the world. Because I know you're good and this isn't, I haven't heard great things. So I sat down with the Bible and God taught me who his son was. And in that, he showed me that I've gotten my love in all the wrong places, that I've looked for it and sought acceptance in all the wrong places, that I can't, nobody can give me love the way I'm meant to be loved. And nobody can accept me the way I'm meant to be accepted outside of Christ. And that if for me, for all of us, we have to receive it from Him in order to receive it from others, and in order to fully receive what's ours, that knowing that we belong. And then once we have that, we don't have to worry about there just isn't worry anymore. And I'm not saying we don't struggle with it at different levels, but you know, that we, in that pure and perfect love, we lose our worry about what the world thinks, and then we get to be who we were created to be. We're not pulled into line or redesigned or uncertain and let other people fill in the blanks for us. Like, we actually get to become who He created us to be. Mm-hmm. And we all are different, and none of us fit in a mold, you know, and there's different ways and levels of being different. But when we come into that fullness of who we are, we don't match or look like anybody else. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of His creation.
Absolutely. I was thinking about what you said earlier when you were saying once you started drinking, you felt like this freedom, the sense of freedom. And obviously it was a false sense, but when you came to this place where you were kind of allowing Jesus to show Himself who He was to you, and those walls were coming down and He was doing healing work within you from, you know, telling you what true love looks like. Did you start feeling a sense of true freedom through Him?
Absolutely. I look back though, and I realize, and I think I judged myself afterwards from that point of becoming a Christian. I looked back and thought, oh, all that time I had with God, this 1 year of journaling and talking to Him all the time, that couldn't have been real because I didn't have Jesus. And, oh, when I overcame alcoholism, it was so hard because I did it by myself. God would have just clicked His fingers and I would have been delivered from it. But I looked back later on through maturity and looked back and saw that, and God is working in us, of course, all the time. And it was God that helped me. And yes, I had to struggle. And yes, I didn't know the fullness of Him through Christ, but I did know Him, and He did get me through that alcoholism. It wasn't me, and it did require, you know, me on my own, and it did require a struggle. The ways that God works isn't always through these immediate deliverances that we kind of come to believe in, or even, I think, elevate as Christians to kind of exalt that, okay, if it didn't happen like this, then it wasn't really God, or if I was really doing a good job of listening to God, then it would be quick and easy and fast. And like, He works these things in us and through us, and He's working them out till the day that we die. Okay. And it's a process. And so I know that He was with me all that way, and I didn't do any of it on my own.
Mm-hmm. How does your marriage look differently today, Mara? I know you mentioned earlier towards the beginning of your marriage, and you know, even on your wedding day, it was hard to really receive that love. Once you started wrapping your heart around what Jesus's love looked like, were you able to receive it differently from your husband?
Absolutely. Yes. It's been, I like everything, like I'm talking about, it's been a process, but it is so, I don't know, freeing, I guess, is the best word, like true freedom, to know that when I feel like He's failing me, it's because I'm failing to go to God for that thing that I need. And it's not that we're not supposed to provide and supply for each other, but we can't fully provide and supply for. So if I'm looking to my husband to really make me feel loved, or really make me feel cared for, then it starts to become a burden that he can't. He can't do that. He wasn't meant or made to do that. So I have to go to God for those things. And so that's been the biggest change, I think, is that I'm not putting all my weight on Him and then removing it and running the other direction. It's like if I feel like I'm starting to get like he's failing me in some way, I realize, okay, I'm failing to go to my God with this need that I have. And it's less about him and more about me and my relationship with the Lord.
That's awesome.
So that's a huge burden off of him, and really is, I feel like, the key. At one point, I went to my pastors after I'd been saved, and I said, I was having a bad year, I think. I don't know. It was about 7 years into salvation, and just something just hit a wall, and I felt like So, I mean, we go up and down, right? But
yes, we do.
So I called my pastor, and I was like, I'm like seriously like done. Like, I'm leaving him. Like, I told my children, which I have never done, that I am leaving. And it was, of course, just devastating to me to see how far I would go down that rabbit trail. But she said to me something to me that night that I called that just changed. I mean, like, it was an instant eye-opening. She's like, this isn't about you, Mara. You know, like, I was making everything about me. Like, he was just, that other side of the coin where you think you're thinking so low of yourself, and then you're exalting yourself so high. It's like, no one can live up to my expectations when I'm in that. And I was making it all about me. And marriage isn't about us. It's about God. Absolutely. It's about God in us. And we get to be that iron against iron. You know, if we're not being rubbed, if things aren't able to come off of us, you know, if we just run from instead of stick with those things that God has given us, then we never get clean. We never get, not clean, it's processed. We're never becoming shined, polished. And we are all going to go through things, and it's going to be tough at times, but that just draws us closer to him. It shouldn't draw us further away from him.
Gosh, that's so good. I mean, you mentioned earlier that running was kind of your go-to, your defense mechanism. And now you're taking that running away completely from the relationship and saying, okay, now I need to run. Instead of doing that, I need to pivot, and I need to run into the arms of Jesus and let him redeem, let him refine the situation. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Run to, not from. And challenges just make us stronger. They don't make us weaker. The only thing that makes us weaker is not receiving the challenge, is deciding that we can't, when God is saying, we, you and I, can.
Gosh, so good. Mara, what does your life look like today?
It's amazing. I mean, you know, COVID's got everything a little crazy, but it's so awesome that we can be so sure that God is for us, that we can be in this thing, and it doesn't even look like a storm when we're with him, does it? It's just like, you're just looking for the rainbow. Like, I know what happens when this happens. Something beautiful. So it's amazing, and I love that everything is constantly evolving in him, that he never leaves us unchanged. We're constantly becoming more beautiful and more like him. And so I'm excited. I'm excited because every time something is difficult, there is breakthrough. And whenever there's breakthrough, we grow. And when we grow, we get better. And so it's an amazing time to be alive. It's exciting.
I love that perspective. I was listening to a sermon on the way here today, and that was kind of what it was pointing to, is yes, these are incredible hard times, but it's not necessarily the circumstances that need to change. It's our perspective that needs to change. And praying that we will have eyes to see him, and praying that we'll have ears to hear what he's doing in the midst of all of this, and to be able to have that perspective of how he sees these things, how he's covering it, how he's working behind the scenes. And like you just said, making us more beautiful day after day after day. I love that. And more like him. So that's awesome.
Yes.
Way to put it, girl.
And I love that it's not even that things are, we're not praying against bad things. We're praying for the new things that are being birthed out of this.
So good. So good. So tell me, I know that listeners are going to want to connect with you, and how can they do that?
I have a Facebook page, Mara Watson, and they can hit me up there anytime.
Awesome. I love it. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to share your story, for your transparency and your vulnerability today, and just letting us into a window of your journey. So I appreciate that you said that today, that redemption really isn't usually just a snap of God's fingers. It's a process. It's a journey. And so thanks for letting us lean in a little bit to hear yours today.
You're welcome, Bethany. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Oh man, I don't know about you, but I took so much away from my chat with Mara, and I hope you did too. But I think the thing that stood out the most to me was the concept we talked about, where she was mentioning that she used to run away. She used to run away from the potential of pain, or from pain, or whatever that looked like, whatever caused fear within her life. And now she's running into the arms of Jesus. And she doesn't say that she does it perfectly, but she has realized that that is her true source. And I was thinking about that in my story. I've walked through divorce, and the concept of opening up my heart again and being vulnerable and trusting again can be so scary. And I think at times I want to close up my heart, but I'm also learning too at the same time to run to Jesus. He is my healing source. He is the one that created me. He is the one that gets to define me, not past experiences, not what someone has said about me, but He gets to be the one that says who I am. And so I encourage you today, friend, if you are feeling like you want to run in whatever you're walking out, run towards Him, because His arms, His love will cover it all. And through that, like she said, through hard times, through circumstances that seem so impossible, with Him, we can not only learn through it, but we can grow through it. Hey friend, if you are loving this episode, hit that subscribe button so you won't miss an episode. I want you to know that we are so grateful for all the reviews that you guys have submitted and shared about the Bring Her Hope podcast. So keep doing that. It blesses us more than you know. It also allows other people to start hearing about the Bring Her Hope podcast. So we can't wait to share another story of God's redemption next time. But until then, lovelies, keep living brave stories for Jesus.